Swagatam, Sunday 8 p.m. We are back with Gyan Ganga Words of Wisdom on our Virat Hindustan Sangam social media channels. Today we have an interesting discussion. We will be discussing a new book released by Dr. Swami at a function in Madras a few days ago, The Brahmin Genocide, the Precursor to Hindu Extinction. So we will be here discussing the book with the author. His pen name is Asi, A-S-I, and we have with us also Sri Iyer of P Gurus. As you know, he's based in California and he is behind the successful portal P Gurus. Sri Iyer handles or is the editor of P Gurus, the portal which every day people look out for interesting stories from India and abroad. And he is also a very colorful personality, having written numerous books all with regarding colors, whether it is black money white or some states purple in the US and various other aspects. And he's regular on our show. I will have to introduce to you our new guest, that is Mr. Mahalingam Balaji. He hails from a lineage of Vedic scholars and Agnihotris who moved to secular occupation one generation ago. He has had the successful career in the corporate sector for nearly 30 years, having held various leadership positions in India and abroad. As a corporate leader and research director, he is well known for his thought leadership and extensive experience in setting up global research and analytics team in mentoring research teams at scale. Currently, he is incubating a think tank to articulate the Bharatiya civilizational worldview in contemporary contexts and to develop institutional mechanism to aid research on the Bharatiya parampara traditions. The urgent focus is to challenge the hate narrative against practitioners of Sanatan Dharma, especially the Brahmin community. As I mentioned, he writes under the pen name Asi, and as you know, this book, as it was released just last week, and we will be discussing the next an hour on this book. And this book is published by Rare Publication of Chennai, and we will know through the program how to get your online copy of the book. So I thank my co-panelists Ramesh Swami and Arvind Chaturvedi, and it is over to Dr. Swami to have the introductory remarks on this discussion on this book today.
Well, thank you very much, Jagdish. You got two guests today, both of them intellectuals in their own right, and qualify to be Brahmins according to the gunas that have been listed in the Gita, and which is that you should be jnani, a tyagi. Tyagi means not in the traditional, it's just too, tyagi is a very strong word, but you know, someone who is not attached to worldly goods and things like that, lives a simple life, that kind of thing. So, Jnani, Tyagi, and Sahasi, which means he's courageous. Now, over the years, foreign people who came here to loot India, they thought that the best way to subdue India is to defeat the Brahmins. The Islamic forces used by killing them. But the British thought the better way would be to brainwash them. So the over a large number of years, the British did two things. One is to try and get Brahmins to become civil servants and forget about all their past of being teachers and so on and so forth. And the other side, they motivated people like E.V. Ramaswamy Nayakar to target the Brahmins as evil people who have been brutalizing the other non-Brahmin groups. Now, I would like to begin by saying that there is a difference between Varna and jati. And so people confuse both. Jati is got to do with blood groups and to ensure that they, in the marriage, you don't marry in such a way that, you know, the children become, you know, from the birth itself become, have all kinds of diseases and so on. So therefore, the Shastras have a description of what are the blood groups which should don't match, should not be matched, and so on. That, but that's got nothing to do with the human person, except that he was born in a particular family and he had a blood group, which in my modern terms is the blood group. But the varna is fourfold, and for a period there has been this scheduled caste group, which became more intensive when the Muslims came, and people of all varnas were declared as were as scheduled caste because they were deprived, they were debased, they were made to do things which was what in Hindi we call as niche. And so there's a much bigger scheduled caste population today than there was in the ancient times of Hindu India. So in that background, what has happened is that somehow Tamil Nadu became the worst affected for the Brahmins, because Caldwell, who was a scholar, he understood that the Brahmins, what hold they had on the society. So they decided to target them. So you had one side, a group led by E.V. Ramaswamy Nayakar, and the other side, a debasement in literature, writing, newspapers by the British to make fun of the Brahmins and ultimately make the Brahmins to be seen as clerks and, you know, people who bootlick the British. So it's after independence, and because during the independence, the Brahmins played a major role in fighting, and they, of course, there were other castes like Muthuraman Thevar belonged to the Thevar caste. And so, you know, Kamaraj belonged to the people from
Kanyakumari,
Nadars. And so, therefore, we had all people, but the Brahmins sort of were the educated people, and therefore they formulated the whatever name was necessary. For a projection to speak with the British, go abroad and propagate and all so on. And that, so therefore the Brahmins became a danger to the British. And on the other hand, you had A.V. Ramaswamy Nayakar, who first thought that his movement would be welcomed by Jinnah. But Jinnah rebuffed him and said that, you know, I don't have anything to do with you. You manage your own matters. I have got a very clear agenda of mine. So then he went to the British. And in fact, on the 15th of August of 1947, E.V. Ramaswamy Nayakar was pleading with the British governor not to leave India. He said, you can go from away from other parts of India, but this part of Tamil Nadu, you should not leave. But of course, the British had already made up their mind to leave totally. So from then on, because of the numbers and the targeting, the jealousy factor, so many other factors, the Brahmins have been targeted. And the Brahmins have not responded because that during the British period, except a few like Satyamurthy or Rajaji or, you know, so many others you can name, Subramanya Bharati. But after independence, slowly the Brahmins moved into civil service, and then thereafter they went abroad. And so today, the Brahmins who are here in Tamil Nadu are a special target, and they're mostly pujaris who have been made a special target. And so in this context, our chief guest today has come out with a book, which I had the pleasure of releasing or speaking about in Madras 2 days ago. And what he has tried to do is that we are really heading to a situation where the Brahmins may be targeted in such a form that would be called a genocide. And now let's not be shocked about it, because when Mahatma Gandhi was murdered, 5,000 at least 5,000 Brahmins were totally innocent, were targeted by a mob, which I believe was directed by Jawaharlal Nehru, who also claimed to be a Brahmin. I don't know what kind of Brahmin he was. And the mobs, because Godse was a Brahmin, so they killed 5,000 at least of Maharashtrians. And that was nothing but a genocide. But it has been totally blacked out in our books. And so we are now, before I conclude and I hand it over to our two great scholars, I would like to say that we are today have to decide 3-4 things. This birth-based, I mean, I'm not saying that if you are born in a Brahmin family, you can't be a Brahmin. I'm not saying that. But if you have the gunas of a Brahmin, which Lord Krishna has put down in the Gita, then you become, by the fact that you have this mentality, like you become a soldier, you have a mindset, which a scholar or a professor will not have. So the same way a Brahmin has to have a mindset, and in that the gunas are a factor, and the Brahmin must not hanker after wealth and position and all that. He is a man who teaches the people, and by that he wins a recognition in society. So in that sense, we now want to know, how can we strengthen the Brahmin population in Tamil Nadu in particular, and wherever Brahmins find themselves under attack in the rest of the country. But principally today, the Brahmins in Tamil Nadu are literally in a situation where they either have to migrate to America or they stay and submit to all the indignities that they do. And particularly the pujaris who run the temples are all targets of the DMK, and we have to fight back against it. So over to our scholar and the author of the book, and then after that Sri Iyer will follow and elaborate some more points. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Swamiji. Namaskaram to all of you. Thank you for having me in this program. Maybe I will take around 10 minutes to explain the context of the book and also the key messages from the book. Brahmin genocide. When we first shared the proof version of the book, we got a lot of feedback. Some feedback suggested, oh, this is a known issue. We know it for a long time. It's been there 35, 40 years. Some even suggested a few names, saying across the national level, these are the few people who are kind of on the forefront of this hate campaign. Some others shared their personal experiences, but the common theme was, yes, this issue is known, but has not been widely discussed within the society. In a way, this is like what in English the phrase they use, the elephant in the room. It is there, it cannot be missed, but for whatever reasons, it's not discussed and discussion is kind of avoided. Now, this elephant in the room needs to be discussed, and it is a time for it, and that is the central theme of this book. The Brahmin hate campaign is not 30, 40 years as some have indicated to us, but our research tells us that it's at least 200 years old. It's a constructed narrative, manufactured. And the objective, interestingly, was not even to target the Brahmins finally. The final objective of this campaign is annihilation of Bharatiya civilizations. Brahmins happen to be in the way as a stumbling block, and hence they will be massacred first. then the logical next question which comes up is, why Brahmins? If we look at a civilization, it takes its memories into the next generations. We call it the civilizational knowledge progression. That happens across all communities. But there are a few communities which take additional responsibilities. Because when we talk about the civilizational transmission, we are talking about their beliefs, their practices, their samskaras, and their way the values they hold as a civilization. Professor Jean Leamy used to mention this in a very nice way. When he talked about other civilizations, he says, the pyramids have been eroded by the desert wind, the marble broken by the earthquakes, and the gold stolen by the robbers. Because most of the civilizations and monuments were physical. But when it comes to the Bharatiya civilization, he says, the Veda is recited daily for thousands of years in an unbroken chain of generations, traveling like a great wave through the living substance of mind. So Brahmins had a role as being at the edge of this civilizational battle as knowledge system transmitters and carriers. And hence, they will be targeted first and are being targeted first. Other communities also have the same responsibilities of carrying the civilizational memory, and hence, one by one, they will also be targeted. Now, the attack on Brahmins is to ensure the traditional knowledge system life cycle is destroyed. Today, we are struggling to keep our knowledge consumption process itself alive, leave alone new knowledge creation. A quick fact is that millions of our ancient manuscripts are lying unread and uninterpreted. Do we have institutional mechanisms to address such issues today at scale and able to do this kind of work? Now, coming back to the main themes of the book. The Brahmin hatred, as I mentioned, was more than 200 years old. There are evidences that in Europe, an essay about India is written, and its target audience is 8-year-old children. And in that, we find evidences of Brahmin hate. The same hate template which is being done now has been taught to the school children 200 plus years before. As I said, this elephant in the room was not discussed much, and hence a name needed to be given to that. So we have kind of termed it as Brahmophobia, and we have defined it in our book. So our request to all the viewers, esteemed viewers on this channel, is in our conversations, let's start using the phrase Brahmophobia, because if we have a language and a common word to use this phenomenon, it will get discussed more and we will have more sharing of experiences. Genocide, when the word genocide came, a few feedback came, hey, is this some kind of a sensationalism? Is this some exaggeration which is being done? There are worldwide accepted models of genocide. It started with an 8-stage model, and now it is now a 10-stage model. And there are various stages which are described as classification, symbolization, discrimination, dehumanization, like that, 10 stages. And for each stage, there are characteristics which are mentioned. So in the book, we have attempted to kind of correlate the Brahmins' current situation with those stages. Hence, the word genocide has not been used as an exaggeration. It has been used after a careful evaluation of facts and application of mind. Now, online hate speech, some might think that, oh, it's just some ranting or venting in the social media. why do we need to be bothered about it? Why make so much importance to it? But research studies are indicating that online hate often translates into real life consequences. So online hate propaganda has potential to transform into real life violence, and hence it cannot be removed. And another point about ramming hate propaganda especially is that this has been done with a lot of effort and money. It does not look like an isolated phenomenon. So we have shared some evidences in the book about that. It is an imaginary world being constructed, a fake narrative about Brahmins being built, and there are some well-formulated techniques being used. We are trying to explain some of these techniques with examples, so the viewers and the readers can kind of understand when they look at a particular Brahmophobia, they can see what is the technique being used in that. As an example, a social media company CEO visited India a few years back, and he held a poster saying, "Smash Brahminical Patriarchy." I think many of us might have come across that. So that word caught our attention. We said, we haven't heard of any matriarchal societies, at least anthropologists have never said any. So what's so special about Brahminical Patriarchy? So it turns out that the Brahminical Patriarchy is a term which has been coined in a research paper. Let's call it as paper A. Now the paper A says, we're comparing our system with the Sri Lankan Sinhalese system, and it refers to a research paper on Sri Lankan Sinhalese system. We call it paper B. Now it turns out that the Sinhalese system is characterized by lack of Brahmins in the system. So if there are two structures we are talking and comparing, and we say that patriarchy exists across both, and one is characterized by the absence of Brahmins, we can kind of surmise that whatever it is not something to do with Brahmins. But anyway, the paper goes on to portray that as a Brahminical patriarchy. Now, the second paper we are talking, we call it the paper B. It refers to another research paper, we can call it a C, and that's about Malabar in Kerala, India. And that particular research paper is an anecdotal evidence of some marriage ceremonies which are supposed to have existed at least 80 years before the author chose to write. And there is not a first person, not even a second person, it is a third person account. So this is what we call as circular referencing technique, where a proposition is made and then it gets amplified across multiple papers and then it gets presented as a factual claim. So similarly, we have also explained about how a foundational layer of hate gets built in a popular sport, Indian sport, cricket, where a foundational narrative is built and over a period, other narratives get added on top of it. So that has been explained in the book. So in some instances, we see a systemic approach is often made to create fake propositions and then use syllogism to manufacture fake narratives. And hence, it's very important to challenge fake narratives before they become as publicly accepted facts. Now, taking a step back, the question which might come to all our viewers, at least some of them, or to the readers of the book is that, okay, this is all fine, but how does this impact me? And the famous Western expression, what is in it for me? So if I may take a minute to explain that, there are four reasons why it is important to all of us and every well-wisher of Bharatiya civilization included, when I say all of us. And the fourfold reasons are, A, though we say this civilizational war is ongoing, we can look at it as different ways. Like Dr. Swami mentioned before, if 100 years back, many moved from the villages to the cities, they moved to secular occupation and they changed their attires and the traditional symbols, external symbols were kind of left. Then this another wave happened where people moved from cities to foreign countries. Now we see a wave of global Brahmin hate. So what next? Now we are at a point where we have to make a decision. How do we respond? And more importantly, what exactly are we running away from? So the second important reason is Bharatiya civilization is not a rights-based civilization. It does not talk about rights. It is a duty-based civilization. It talks about duties. The third important reason why we all must care is one can say, oh, I mind my own business. I have a job. I want to take care of my family. I don't want to be getting involved in all this. Unfortunately, this is a civilizational. It's not about a particular individual or his behavior or her outlook of the world. Every civilizational member is a legitimate target in the civilizational battle. And hence, we have no option to ignore this battle. And the fourth final reason I will conclude is global Brahmin hate is today masquerading as caste discrimination issues. It's coming in that disguise. Previously, it came disguised. Actually, if we look at it, step back, it was the knowledge system attack which got disguised as Brahmin hatred, because they were hated because they were protecting the knowledge systems and they were transmitting. The layer became Brahmin hate. Now there is one more layer getting added as caste discrimination issues. So hence, this is going to become much more bigger and we need to have a narrative to counter it. This is a systemic issue. It needs systemic solutions. As we all know, replying to hate speech with hate is not an option, and that is not going to work. So we need to do according to our dharma, our nyaya, and within our constitutional means, we need to find ways to address this challenge. Fortunately for us, thought leaders like Dr. Swami have traveled in this path before. They have shown us what can be done and how to progress in this journey. So we need to build on this. And we need to make further progress in addressing this. So I pray to Ishwara that we all travel in this journey together. And I pray to Ishwara for his anugraha for all of us in this. With that, I conclude. Thank you. And I pass it back to, I think, Sri Ayyaji now, correct?
Yes, correct.
Thank you. Namaskaram. Always a pleasure to be on a VHS program. I first want to talk about two different things. One is what is being seen in Tamil Nadu, and then quickly I'll come to United States and explain what is happening here. So quickly, hopefully it won't take too long. First of all, in Tamil Nadu, Dr. Swami, I just wanted to commend you for taking up this issue and be there to release this book. It really needs the attention of everyone. Brahmin is just the first target because they are less than 3%, probably 4-5% in India, even if you be very generous about counting. And that is seen as the easy target. Everybody else is probably in second two digits. I'm looking at Varna, assuming very by birth Varna classification, because that's how the census, that is how the census enumerates us. Anyway, they are saying that they are not doing caste, but the way the British conducted the first census, they put your as your last name. You really don't have a choice. You've already been notified. This is a very easy stick to beat the Indians with. Unfortunately or fortunately, this happened only in some sections of India. In the south, it still was village name, father name, and your name. There was no indication of what caste you were. Anyway, so this is one thing. But as getting back to specifically to Tamil Nadu, the BJP has always been seen as a Brahmin party, so the BJP leaders tend to shy away from speaking up for the rights of Brahmins. Whatever right or wrong approach, I'm not going to say that, but I would like to point out here that Annamalai is the first BJP politician in the recent past who has dedicated a full press conference talking about the kind of genociding efforts that are taken up against Brahmins. Nobody else has even opened this approach. And also, from the last book release function, Dr. Swami, I wasn't sure if you are going a little soft on the current DMK regime based on the word by one of its top leaders that the said person, Mr. Rajiv Gandhi, will not utter any more words. Sir, this, the top leadership of DMK themselves have gloated in other videos that's available in YouTube, where one of the top leaders says that one locality called Gopalapuram is now completely free of Brahmins, and we take credit in driving them out. Not only that, the DMK government does not want to implement EWS, economically weaker sections, quoting that this will benefit the Brahmins. Sir, this is also another form of genocide. Please don't go soft on this. There are there is one more intellectual in the DMK party who targets female journalists who happen to be Brahmins, uses bad words to describe them. Sir, Dr. Swami, this is being done in overt and covert ways. These buggers think that they can do whatever they want and get away with it. Sorry for my French. And the only person that they are deathly scared that they get nightmares about is you. So please, let's take it offline, and I'll give you some other information about this. Don't go soft on them. They will. This Rajiv Gandhi character, you said that he may no longer be the secretary. I don't care, sir. This is the complete gene pool of the DMK, the Dravida parties. And I'm sorry, ADMK may have softened it because Jayalalitha was a Brahmin, but the underlying current exists. There is no difference. So that is DMK. Let us go to US. What is happening? There is a lady called Tenmori Soundarajan. He claims that she's a Dalit Diva. She was born in the United States. It is not known how long she spent time in India, but she has suddenly become a Dalit activist. And in one of her statements, she says, "You aunties and uncles, we are coming after you." You see the parallels? And this lady has created a dubious survey. And this dubious survey has been lapped up hook, line, and sinker by the California government, various departments, including today the assembly. Dr. Swami, I have spent last 6 months trying to show the linkage of this lady's company called Equality Labs with terror-linked organizations. And when this new bill, which is the caste discrimination bill that Sri Asi referred to, when people pointed it out to them that, look, you are going by the work of somebody whose funding sources are dubious, and that you need to really look at her survey. Her survey has been discarded not by me, but by the court in California. The only place they tried to use this to stick it to one of the employees of Cisco, that place the judge threw out this survey. And that happened in 2021. We are in 2023. For 2 years, these lies have been known to all the lawmakers. When the lawmakers are confronted, when they were, legislating this SB 403, when they were shown the mirror, they says, "Oh, we don't look at what is happening in the justice system. We make the laws." Such arrogance of the California politicians. And in what is worse, Dr. Swami, and this is one Hindu American who happens to be the lone assembly member. In fact, he has come and met you. He has talked to me. I know him. He knows you. Okay. Even this individual votes for SB 403. Does he not realize that he is going to kill himself first? Doesn't he have children? Doesn't he have family? What kind of a nonsense is this? So there is a bigger hand doing all these things. So that goes back to what Sri Asi said, that this is a target. The Hindus are targeted, and the Brahmins are the first fodder because they think that we will not fight back. You are wrong. We are going to fight back. We may get 10 blows. We are going to give you 2 blows for sure. And you will not forget those 2 blows. So the point here, sir, it's now, today is the 9th. So 7 days now, I'm talking about what the US government is now allowing under freedom of speech. 7 days now, on 2nd July, between 1:30 a.m. and 2:30 a.m., some miscreants who are identified by pictures in their of the video tried to set the Indian consulate building on fire. This has been recorded by the said miscreants and claimed that, look, we are going to kill. This is the thing. They put posters with Indian diplomats. These posters have been put up in Canada, in United Kingdom, in United States, in Australia, and in Italy. May have been more countries. Everywhere the same template. Everything changes except the local consulate official. You see how brazen these people have become? Who are these? Do you think that these few lumpens wearing pagdis thinking that they will be able to sway the people's minds? Why are they really giving a bum rap to the rest of the Sikh American and Sikh Canadian and Sikh Australian community? Why are these moderates keeping quiet? I don't know. I wish some of them would speak up. But the underlying theme again and again is 7 days have gone. Till today, no arrests have been made. In fact, the second day after it happened, Dr. Swami, I being a techie, sometimes I wear my techie hat, I had told them that you have all these tools. You don't even need to know whose face is there. You don't need to do face algorithm matching to understand that this is the person who was doing it. You could first locate from their cell phone because they took their cell phones with which they took the video. They had cell phones on them. You could have triaged them and within 15 minutes, you could have picked them up. So what I'm trying to say is there is a deliberate go slow happening in several administrations, regrettably. One of the congressmen who happens to be Hindu American, Mr. Ro Khanna, he condemns it by way of a tweet. Why? You can't pick up a phone and talk to FBI. You can't pick up a phone and talk to SFPD and ask him to get off of his white ass butt and go and do something about this. Why just want to give one tweet and then keep quiet and say, oh yeah, I'm speaking up for you guys. That's not enough, Mr. Ro Khanna. I'm just taking one example here. The others don't even want to say it. Pramila Jaipal doesn't even want to say it. So the thing is, we ourselves are digging our own holes. If you want to be Hindu American when you want to get our votes, but you want to be everything else when once you are in power. This is a very bad bargain for the Hindus. Please understand, guys. So anyway, I'm going on a rant here. I realize that. The point I'm trying to make is the destruction attempt is now beginning to take root. Even in India, so many years, thousands of years, the Muslims and the British, they tried to, change, force the conversion of Hindus and make them, into something else has failed. But now the concerted effort is really beginning to make inroads. Dr. Swami, I'll tell you one more thing. I have a book on the back. What I'm hearing, sir, is the one community people who have gotten enriched by dubious means are buying up properties along some very, very critical areas, banks of Kaveri. Any land that is coming up for sale, they are able to bid three times the going price. Who will not sell, sir? But there is a bigger conspiracy here going. I don't know what the Modi government is doing. I wish they would understand. They would wake up and smell the coffee and do something about it. I think I'll stop here. I'm sure there are going to be a lot of questions.
Okay, good. Okay, then let Arvind. We have Ramesh also, but Ramesh is we have too many Tamilians in a row. So let me first have one Uttar Pradeshi Brahmin say what he has to say on this matter.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Swami, for giving me the opportunity. Now, this book, which we are discussing, is primarily written from the angle of the persecution and the victimization of Brahmins in Tamil Nadu. Mr. Sri Iyer took the issue to the USA, which is totally a different angle altogether. I don't agree with him if he says that Brahmins are persecuted and victimized in United States of America. But anyway.
Oh, I'll prove it to you, sir. Go ahead.
No argument. I'm saying Uttar Pradesh, which has the highest population of Brahmins. In Uttar Pradesh, there are about 18 to 19% Brahmins. And Brahmins have dominated Uttar Pradesh politics for about 50 years. And traditionally, Brahmins were with Congress. And Congress had given so many Brahmin chief ministers in Uttar Pradesh, Kamalapati Tripathi, Narayana Dutt Tiwari, Hemavati Nandan Bhagwana, and all that. Unfortunately for Brahmins, Congress almost died after 1989. Since 1989, Congress has been on the downslide in Uttar Pradesh, and so the fate of Brahmins. Brahmins thought that once they switch the sides from Congress towards BJP, perhaps BJP will protect them. And in last 30 years or so, where BJP has been a prominent party and also ruled several times, in fact, Brahmins have become more victimized under BJP rule as compared to earlier, despite of the fact BJP has not given any Brahmin chief minister. But BJP had two heads of the BJP, the state presidents, but though the state president were only for the namesake, we had a prime minister from BJP for 6 years in this country who was a Brahmin representing Lucknow as a parliamentary constituency, Mr. Atal Bihari Vajpayee. But we all know what kind of Brahmin Atal Bihari Vajpayee was. And therefore, if Brahmins had any hope of protection from Atal Bihari Vajpayee, this hope was never to be completed. And we know what happened. So I'm saying the persecution and victimization of Brahmins. I will not use the term genocide, but the way it has been done in Uttar Pradesh, and Dr. Swami is a witness. In 1993, when Mulayam Singh was chief minister, with Bahujan Samaj Party as their partner and Kashiram as the leader, Kashiram, of course, had a slogan, which later on they withdrew. And this slogan was targeting all the upper castes, not only Brahmins, but Brahmins were the most victimized community because they were at 18-19% in the society, but in the bureaucracy, in the universities, in the all the top positions, Brahmins were more than 35-40% and they were dominating. And that is where the hate for Brahmins has started. Mulayam Singh, Kashiram, and then Mayawati, they started targeting the vote bank, and they thought the only way to get the non-Brahmins vote consolidated was to abuse the Brahmins. And that is how they started targeting. In 1993, when Mulayam Singh was chief minister, later Mayawati was chief minister, the Brahmins, by name, they were identified and targeted, victimized, transferred to insignificant positions, punished, and a lot of false allegations were made against them. And Dr. Swami led the Brahmin community in Uttar Pradesh. And Uttar Pradesh Brahmin community will always be grateful to Dr. Swami for his contribution when he started Brahmin Swabhiman Andolan Samiti in Uttar Pradesh in 1993. Under this committee, we traveled throughout the Uttar Pradesh, starting from Ghaziabad to Gorakhpur, and we started organizing the Brahmin community against it. And of course, the gratefulness of Dr. Swami is that he said, anybody who comes in this movement, because we are fighting against the injustice of the Brahmins, even if a non-Brahmin joins my organization, I would welcome him. And he actually appointed people who were non-Brahmins also in this position, only because they thought Dr. Swami is leading a cause for justice. And therefore, the movement succeeded. Reversing the trend of victimization of Brahmins, but even Mayawati, Bahujan Samaj Party leader after Kashiram, under the name of social engineering, started inviting Brahmins. And not only invited Brahmins, but Brahmins as ministers. And she said, whatever they did earlier was a mistake. So this is whatever is being done in Tamil Nadu. I'm sure a similar movement, what was done in Uttar Pradesh, may be needed. And of course, Dr. Swami cannot lead this movement in United States of America, as Mr. Sriya here has said. But Tamil Nadu, certainly. And this trend is not peculiar. My point of view is only that this trend is not only for Tamil Nadu. Entire Uttar Pradesh and even in North India, the same trend is being used against Brahmins. And the reason is very simple. Reason is to consolidate the vote bank of Dalit. Now, let me just tell you, if you give me few more minutes, I have very interesting facts to say. A France expert, Francis Goiter, he prepared a report by saying that Dalit actually literally means oppressed. People who have been victimized in the society, He said the real Dalits in India are the Brahmins. And he quoted, he researched and quoted, gave the figures will be surprising to our viewers also. He said, in Delhi, there are 50 Shulabh Shauchalaya, the public latrines, which are managed by an organization by Mr. Pathak. 325 workers who are working in these Shulabh Shauchalayas are Brahmins. Delhi and Mumbai, which are the biggest metropolitan cities of this country, 50% of the rickshaw pullers, the poorest of the poor, they are Brahmins and they are from eastern Uttar Pradesh and Bihar. You'll find Pandey, you'll find Dubey, Mishra, Shukla, Tiwari. These are the people who are the rickshaw pullers. And in Mumbai, 50% of the taxi drivers are from UP, and these taxi drivers are Brahmin from UP. So I'm saying economically, they are the most backward. And per capita income of the Brahmins, if you look at the community-wide figures, the highest, the lowest income of a particular community per capita is Muslims in India. And after Muslims, next community comes is Brahmins. And this Mr. Goyachar has also given the figures. And he said the per capita income of the Brahmins is around 537 rupees only. Whereas for SCST, it is 800 rupees. And for Christian community, it is 1600 rupees. So if you look at the per capita income, the affluence, if there is any index of the income, then Brahmin community comes much lower. And all these positions, you see, one peon in the government, the, if the post is advertised, there will be 3,000 or 4,000 applications, out of which more than 50% will be Brahmins, even if the job is for a Safai Karmachari, for a person who is clean. So this data is sufficient to suggest and show that Brahmin community is the lowest income earner per people, and they are the most victimized and worse than the Dalit community. And if anybody needs a reservation, anybody needs protection, anybody needs a special scheme for the government, it is the Brahmin community. And naturally, the entire this narrative against Brahmin is because of reservation policy only. Reservation has been given to scheduled caste, scheduled tribes, OBCs, and now, of course, minorities and other things. But Brahmins are the victims, and they are not getting. If you look at the Brahmins, the plight, the students, a community of the Brahmins, they are also so dissatisfied that in any competition, even if they get 90% marks, they don't get selected. And the person who get 5% marks or 10% marks from a different community, they get selected because of the bad reservation policy that we have. Even in IITs, even in IIMs, where there's a competition, the position reserved 27% for OBCs, 22% for scheduled caste and scheduled tribe. Brahmin community is the worst sufferer. And therefore, Dr. Swami, time has come to for you to raise this issue and lead a movement for the community, which is the most able community, highest intellect the community has. There's no fault of this community. They're not done a crime if they are more intellectual than others. So I think Dr. Swami, you should raise this issue, and very timely this book from Tamil Nadu has come. The, again, I'm saying this book may be particularly all the instances that have been given may be from Tamil Nadu, but if you generalize in entire India, especially the Uttar Bharat, the North India, Brahmins are the most victimized community. They should be protected, and the facility should be provided to them. Thank you.
Ramesh, you want to say?
I think Sri Iyer wanted to respond, and then I'll give it to Jagdish, and then finally me.
Yeah, Arvindji, just one quick thing. One quick reason why I said I will give you proof. This flawed caste discrimination report, which forms one of the bases of the SB 403 bill, that is actually passing in the California's assembly also now. It has passed one stage, last stage is left. But there, they identify upper caste people as with their last names, which is the first name you want to know. The the first name that they have mentioned as caste supremacists, IYER, SHUKLA. See, the thing is, the person who calls herself the expert on Dalit, her own last name is used by many Brahmins, Soundara Rajan. And they want to use this as a basis to say that, oh, you are an upper caste person. Therefore, you will discriminate. See, this thing is, we are being called guilty without the Democrats have become the judge, the jury, and the executioner in this part. And many of these lawmakers are too dumb to realize it. They are too arrogant. They think that we don't matter, our votes don't matter. That is the hard and that is the hard truth that the India and Hindus need to realize, especially those living in the United States. It happened today in California. It is coming to your state. 70% of Indian Americans vote Democrat. Come on, guys. You are basically aiding your own destruction. Thank you.
Yeah, but Mr. Iyer, let me just give you a counter. The United States...
Let Arvind finish.
Brahmins are victimized in United States of America, you guys are competent enough. You can fight your own battle. But think of the poor Brahmins in Uttar Pradesh who do not have even money. 537 rupees per capita income. Just think of that. So I'm saying in terms of quality and quantity, the USA problem is very minuscule as compared to problems that we have in Uttar Pradesh.
We'll have an international conference and ask people from US also to come for Brahmins in Delhi and all the states of India. Okay,
Jagdeep ji, you go ahead. You go ahead. CG, go ahead. Yeah, CG, you wanted to say something. Go ahead.
Yeah. Namaste ji, Dr. Arvind Chaturvedi, thank you for your comments. Just one point, if I may add on, is that in the book, we do talk about the issues in Madras, but also about Maharashtra and across a few instances in India as well, and also abroad, because this is a global issue. And some examples are more towards Madras, because there is a historical reason of Bengal presidency, Madras presidency, and also in Maharashtra is where we saw a lot of this come on during the colonial era. So I will not discuss that in the talk, but one request we will have is, we are also looking at Hindi translation of the book, Ishwara Kripa. And if it does happen, we may need some additional information which is pertaining to the northern states also, where it is a Hindu, not just in across, but also in the Hindi-speaking population, where the social media is also active. So, thank you. Over to you, back.
Jagdish, you go ahead.
Yeah, I only want to make a comment. Looking at the freedom movement and the leaders of the freedom movement all over in different parts of India, I noticed that the Brahmins played a very dominant role in the freedom movement. And if you see all the Krantikaris also, I'm talking about people who are in the Congress, but they were revolutionaries which never believed in what Congress was doing under Mahatma Gandhi. Most of these leaders had a Brahmin background. So it was but natural that the Britishers and the subsequent powers started targeting the Brahmin leaders to defame them or bring them down, because according to me, they thought that by eliminating the Brahmins, they were trying to attack the Hindu community. It was not just on the question of some of the communities, but the real attack was the Hindu community, and Brahmins was one of the towering leadership which was giving the Hindu community. So they systematically targeted the Brahmins, looking at instances in the book as well as the history which Dr. Swami narrates about the freedom struggle in the then state of Tamil Nadu or Madras, as it was called, or the larger Madras state. The leadership which was given by the Brahmin community for the freedom movement, including Maharashtra, North India, Uttar Pradesh, and many of the states. So the British was particularly interested in targeting the Brahmins as an Indian community or as a Hindu community, which becomes very clear once if you see the history of the last 150 years. So I just wanted to make this comment in the context of today's topic and discussion. Now, perhaps Ramesh would like to have some comment and take the program forward.
Okay, sir. Thank you, Jagdishi. Thank you, everyone, again. Dr. Swami, consistently, I think you have said this in the past, the knowledge class, the Britishers saw that as the weapon and they thought that it was a threat. So when they started this divide and conquer by starting to destroy, even earlier than that, Asiji can give us, basically, once you destroy knowledge, it is easy to rule over people. I think that was the basic premise in saying that, okay, now who is the most knowledgeable among the people? So be it the Mughal era or the British era, they thought that the Brahmins, they were knowledgeable, they knew. So they have the knowledge to fight back. Because once you start doing that, because when you have people who are illiterate or to a large extent who are not aware of the laws or they are not knowledgeable, it's easy to spread lies or what's happening today using WhatsApp. Basically, it is the same concept. Essentially, WhatsApp is using for spreading nonsense and people believe whatever it is. In those days, whatever form, they said, you kill the knowledge class, you can dominate everybody else. And that's exactly what happened. And you've been consistently saying this. Dr. Swami, the underlying thread I've seen in the comments is, what are the immediate steps that I have no hope in Modi government doing anything, but essentially from you, Dr. Swami, what do you think are the most critical steps to reverse this trend? I mean, in the US, we can have another discussion. I'm telling you, the most incompetent people are Hindus in America are the most incompetent bunch of people, most selfish, idiotic voting Democrats, people who are voting Democrats. They don't know. They're digging their own grave. Let's not even talk about them, because as Arvindji said, because we're the most stupid people, are educated fools. But Dr. Swami, just to come back from India perspective, from this Brahmin hatred, and I echoed Sri Iyer's sentiment that we ask you, please do not let go of this Rajiv Gandhi guy, because those seeds of hatred start growing very fast. I know you're going to say you don't have time, but again, a humble request from this Brahmin, please do not let go of that guy, because that one lesson you teach, one lesson that you're going to teach this person or some persons like this will go a long way in setting the stage of looking, as you've consistently said, Brahmin is a guna. Let us start going from there. Don't continuously hate. We are 2% of the population in Tamil Nadu. All I have to say is, if the 98% of the population is afraid of the 2%, go ahead and figure who is bigger. That's all. So Dr. Swami, coming back, please give us at least 2 or 3 points. What do you think that can be done to reverse this hatred? Dr. Swami, you're muted. I don't know why. One second, Dr. Swami. One second. Let me switch you over to another mic. I think that the other mic is... give me 1 minute, Dr. Swami. I'm going to switch you over to another mic. Give me 1 minute, Dr. Swami. I'm just going to switch you over to a... Yeah, Dr. Swami, you can speak now.
Yeah. Okay. But see, the thing is that this is the question you raised is really the key for moving forward. We are now more or less clear that the Brahmins are under siege, or the Brahmins are being subject to a possible genocide in the future. But what the Brahmin community can do, I don't want all the Brahmins to come. There are some Brahmins I can't name on this program, but I know that they are really terrible people who talk from both sides of their mouth. We have to select people. And in the case of our scholar here today, whose book we are discussing, we need people like that, you see.
And if it's to be a national one, then you make a form national committee. But we have to make an example. I would start first with Tamil Nadu, because that's really gone too far. And it has to be retaliated. UP and other places, we can take it up later, and it will be a much easier task to do. But I think the real question is how to deal with the Tamil Nadu. And here, don't rely on all the Brahmins, so-called Brahmins, but rely on others. In, for instance, the function of the book release of our guest here today, Shri Asi, as is for short he is called. We had a Tevar also, a scholar. So I said, you are from today onwards, you are a Brahmin. I declare you as a Brahmin. But so there are people who are willing to come, and the Tevar community is a real fighting community, you see. And they have always been, from Muthuramalinga Tevar's time, people very, very friendly with the Brahmin community. So you have to create a new thing, because with 3%, you can't fight the remaining 97%. And that's those are things we can plan. And but as of now, today, I cannot give you a formula by which we can go forward, except that we should all agree that now we must fight back. That's all. If I can scare the DMK, as many people say I do, that they, the moment I say something, they make some corrections. You may not think that's a complete correction, but the fact is that they do. At least that the guy doesn't open his mouth anymore. That's a big thing for a DMK man to do it, because a Brahmin raised an issue against him. So there is a possibility for a person to be a Brahmin and still be feared by the anti-Brahmin forces of Tamil Nadu. So the question is how to go about it. For that, we will have another session and request Mr. Asi to be there also as our intellectual who can, give us a overall construction of the problem.
Shri Asiji, do you have in your book some recommendations as to how to turn this? So give just from there, because most of the viewers want to know, okay, what do we do? We know all this. We do realize they want to learn more. But in your view, what are one or two important steps? Dr. Swami said we have to start rallying, but we cannot depend on 3%. But we need to, spread this message. So in your view, do you have anything to share on this? You're muted, sir. You're muted. Please unmute yourself.
Are you able to hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Ramesh, thank you for that question. It's a very important question. In the later sections of the book is divided into a few sections. In the later sections, it does talk about some ways of moving forward and certain recommendations which we received from as a feedback when we were doing this journey. So that is something which at a global level, and as each person who is reading this book may have some kind of an action which they can relate to. Right? That was very important for us, because we said, A, the goal of the book is to create the awareness that what we are facing is not isolated instances, but it is a concerted global attack against our knowledge systems and against Brahmins as a community. It is not a local issue, number one. Number two, those who are reading the book may get a sense of that issue, plus also what they can do at their individual level. And third, to your question, I think this conversation has to go forward, and like what Dr. Swamiji has kind of advised us, maybe some more thoughts need to be put towards having a concrete plan in some states where we can use it as some kind of a template and kind of use that template to move forward in the rest of the other places.
Thank you. Shri, do you have any closing comments, and then Arvind? You can go to Arvind. I think he's frozen. Jagdish ji. Arvind, are you okay? Yeah, go ahead, Shri. Finish it off.
Yeah, this is a long battle, and unfortunately or fortunately, we are the target right now. The first thing we need to understand is that we also suffer from this Aham Brahmasmi complex. Hindus and Brahmins more so. We think we know everything. Sometimes we also think the others don't know anything. Please get yourself out of this mindset. Many of us are speaking up because we see that we are being slow cooked. And it is the kartavya, it is the duty of the Brahmin. That gene is still running inside you to at least highlight where the danger is, where the danger lies. Please engage us, question us, but listen to what we are trying to say. We are trying to give you a very alternative, reasoned explanation of what is happening, and it affects all of us. Thank you, sir.
I'll add one line to that.
Okay.
I'll add one before Arvind concludes. See, I'm in the process of creating in the United States, helping the local people, the local Indians in the United States, to create an organization for Hindus and Jews to come together to fight this, because the Jews still continue to face persecution or at least hate. So Jagdish and I met the Israeli Consul General in Bombay recently, and he was quite sympathetic to the idea, and I wanted him to name somebody who in the United States will become agreeable to be a collaborator in this. And we have a man from Uttar Pradesh who is a Brahmin, who has agreed and who is very, very well to do. I've stayed in his house to see how well to do is. He said, I'll take care of the entire organization, but the intellectual content you will have to provide. So I think we are all set, and I'm going to the United States in November to set it up. So that will be one thing that you can do in terms of helping the Brahmins, because Hindus means Brahmins included. And we would like others also who are sympathetic to the problem of the Brahmins to be amongst the Hindus to also come forward. So that is there. As far as India is concerned, I really think, frankly, if I can get the Tamil Brahmins to a certain percentage, say out of the existing Tamil Brahmins, if I can get 35% of the Brahmins to come around to say, yes, we are ready to fight, we have won the war. Mm-hmm. And then everybody will back down. It will have an electoral significance. After all, you can see from myself, or one person, I began when they were all talking about me and the Brahmin and what a useless chap is, why he's doing here, till I dismissed the DMK government. As a minister, I came and dismissed his government and showed that they didn't count for anything. Not even a bus was burnt, even a cycle was punctured. You see, nothing of the kind. In fact, Karunanidhi ran into his one of his secret houses and locked himself in, you see. So I think it's possible. And once we do that, and the younger generation of Brahmins in our own thing, take Swami Lion is totally different from all the Brahmin, elder Brahmins that I know. I mean, Frank is outspoken, he's a fighter, he's got the imagination to think of ways of responding. So I think that kind of crowd is what I'd like to come get together by a conference later on for Brahmins in Tamil Nadu.
Arvindji, can you conclude?
Okay, thank you, Dr. Swami. This issue is much bigger that we can put into a 70-minute program. And I was under the impression that it is only India where Brahmins are targeted and victimized and persecuted. And our friend, Mrs. Sri Iyer, has also added to my information and added to the information for our viewers that in the United States of India as well, the Brahmins are targeted, and they need to be an organization to fight for their cause. Tamil Nadu, this has been a much bigger issue, and the book that we discussed today and the author, Mr. Asi, has also narrated the whole background, And people all over India and people who watch this program will also now be aware. It's a much bigger issue. And as Dr. Swami said, we need a much bigger discussion, maybe a conference. And I'm sure Dr. Swami would lead this conference under VHS or any other banner. And people, intellectual all over India, including the non-Brahmins, will also come and support this cause. Because I've seen when he led the organization and raised the flag in Uttar Pradesh, all people, all types of people supported that. And what could be the more evidence of the success of the organization and the movement, that even the organization, Bahujan Samaj Party, which started the anti-Brahmin hate campaign, they started taking Brahmins and made them in important positions as minister. So thank you, the author of this book, Brahmin Genocide, Mr. Asi. Thank you, Mr. Sri Ayer, our regular contributor to our programs in Words of Wisdom and Gyan Ganga. And thanks, Jagdish Shetty ji, Ramesh Swami ji, for providing vital inputs for this program. Our technical team led by Ashish Shetty, Swaminathan, Gadgi Rakesh, Ishwar Ayer, Tejas Naval Gul, Vishal Mehta, and Najesh Nair. We will be meeting once again on Sunday with another program with Dr. Subramanian Swami and other guests. Till then, Namaskar, Jai Hind.
Jai Hind. Namaskar.
Namaste.